Welcome to Now You Know with Catherine and Jen. In today's episode, you will hear Catherine interviewing Dr. Andrew Fenton and Dr. Letitia Maynell, philosophy professors at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Today's episode will be about the ethics of captivity. Is captivity ethical?
Andrew, Letitia, such a pleasure to be able to speak with you today on the subject of the ethics of zoos and more generally, humans' relationships with other species. I want to begin by asking you if you could speak a little bit about the differences between zoos and sanctuaries. How would you define a zoo?
It's a good question. I mean, a zoo now, and so this would be post-18th century, a zoo now tends to be short for zoological societies. So these tend to be societies that have been formed, sometimes with a history with local scientists involved, that started to collect what they would, you know, scare quotes, exotic animals that were unfamiliar in the local region, largely actually in the very, very beginning of zoos, as we understand them in the modern period, to study them. These weren't open to the public. It only gradually became open to the public in the 19th century, really. So you're talking about the Victorian era for the kinds of zoos where people go and see these animals, but they tend to still use the term collections to reflect this. So animals that are populating zoos are known as collections, and that goes back to this period of bringing together exotic animals to study and observe.
So I would just take a kind of different tack rather than the historical one. I tend to think about the difference as a question of who is it for? Is it for humans or is it for the animals themselves? So that zoos tend to be fundamentally for humans, whether they're scientific, right? So for the sake of scientific research, or whether it's for entertainment, is fundamentally different than a sanctuary, which is for the animals themselves who are there.
So is this difference determined by whether or not a facility is governmentally run or privately owned, or is it not as clear-cut as that?
I don't think it's anywhere near as clear-cut as that. We would need legislation that did that job. I mean, I think organizations like the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquaria are trying to have a certain level of standard for zoos and create, you know, just a reliable standard. But that's as close as you get to any kind of legal difference.
So within the discussion of the ethics of zoos, you know, one of the best high threshold standards for animals in captivity is for zoos to become sanctuaries. So that would mean it would be possible to be both a zoo and a sanctuary, but it would mean, as Letitia has indicated, it would mean that the emphasis has to be the best interests of the animals in captivity. It has to mean that their basic needs are met. This should allow for the animals to disappear and be out of sight should they find human presence stressors. So if, as zoos, because zoos are actually in critical discussions about this, they're very much in a conservation mission mode now. So lots of, like the CASA, the Canadian Accredited Zoos and Aquariums, are trying to push this commitment to conservation. But there has been chatter about, no, they need to go even further. They need to actually take seriously a sanctuary mandate. But it will mean re-envisioning the space for visitors. It means that, as Letitia's indicated, this means the interests of the animals that are in captive holdings. Their interests take priority.
Thank you, Andrew. I wanted to ask in more detail about what you were saying, Letitia, about accreditation. So from the work that I do for animal charities, I've learned about the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums and that it's a self-regulating body and that often places that are accredited by CASA, in fact, are some of these roadside zoos, yet they're accredited. So could you just point me or direct me to a way in which to inform people where they can check out, you know, what kind of accreditation would be, you know, ideal?
Just to take a little step back, I think what's particularly challenging right now is that our norms are changing around our relationships with other animals, which is great. They have to change. We have catastrophic, appalling relationships with many, many animals in our society. And so organizations like CASA are navigating that, in that they're, you know, those that aren't members, they have very little impact on. And of course, the laws in Canada are just pretty egregious, right? There are very few laws that really protect animals in captive environments. And so I think they're in this very, very fraught space. My sense is that they know they have some bad actors, but they're hoping to have their membership and their organization make them better actors. We have to make things better for animals in captivity, to maybe rule out putting certain animals in captivity. I mean, this is where the new law about cetacean captivity in Canada is so important, saying those animals should not be in captivity, period.
So is one determining factor of how ethical a facility is just merely the species that they're keeping in that facility?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The species they're keeping and under what conditions. We have to take into account the species characteristics, the species typical characteristics of animals, and see whether they can fare well under the conditions of captivity.
So when you're talking to zoo professionals about this, also advocates and thinking, and the public, and thinking about a middle way between zoos now as conservation mission oriented versus sanctuary oriented. I was in a room once with some zoo personnel where the first thing that one of them said is, you know, one of the things that we need to come to terms with as a baseline in discussions of zoos and ethical zoos is captivity is wrong. And so when we take a free living animal or an animal that comes from a free living ancestry, we keep them in a zoo, we have to recognize as a baseline that captivity is wrong. And so they actually have their due for redress. We need to make efforts to change that captivity environment so that it's the best possible thing that we can have for them, given that what we've done as a baseline is wrong. That was in a zoo context where these were zoo professionals talking about that. And you have within that community, people of deep moral character who recognize that the baseline has to be something like that, with the recognition that that puts a great deal of moral burden. Each of us, when we take an animal into captivity, take it upon ourselves, if we're going to do this ethically, to give them a life worth living where their basic needs are met. And that's just not physical needs, and it's not just health needs. There's two things to keep in mind there. One is, how large is the social community in which they live, and how responsive are those in charge to the choice of the animals to socialize with whom they choose? Because most social animals are very, very particular. They need to have choice about who they bond with and who they hang out with. And if they don't, something's going wrong.
What are your views on a species being non-native to the region? So for example, obviously there's a big problem with polar bears being shipped to very warm climates and set on display. Is that something else? Or is there an ethical way to display that type of, like a Nordic animal in a warmer climate?
That ideally, what zoos should be doing when they're actually taking on this higher threshold of ethical coexistence, when they do have, like in scare quotes, exotic animals, it's because they're doing something that's normatively deep. Now, the way that zoos will do that now is conservation. So the reason why they will have, you know, scare quotes, exotic animals in their so-called collections is because they're feeding into conservation in one of two ways. Either these are animals that they can continue to breed as breeding stock with the hope of re-release sometime in a to-be-specified future, or they're raising awareness of conservation needs by having these animals in people's faces. I mean, the problem with the first one is most of these animals are not re-releasable, particularly given ecological collapse around the world, so that's disingenuous. And two, you don't need to have an animal in someone's face to have them have an interest. As a number of people have pointed out, most kids go through a stage in their very young life where they love dinosaurs. Like, they're all over dinosaurs. They will read everything that they can about dinosaurs. They'll memorize their Latin names. You know, it's no bubble bursting to point out that there are no dinosaurs except birds around. then the zoo ramps up to this high threshold of sanctuary. And so those are the contexts where I can see, quote unquote, exotic animals in so-called collections. But apart from that, I would have deep, deep concerns about the justifications they have for doing that.
Yeah, and I do think the kind of conceptual issues matter here. Can't call them collections. Stop calling them collections. That has this sort of wrong conceptual meaning. They're not a stack of books. They're not a stack of objects. They're a group of beings. You know, I think it tells you, again, that basic idea of who is it for. If it's for the animals, you're not going to think of them as members of a collection.
Just to jump in there, we really need to address the fact that here in Canada, the main piece of legislation we have to protect animals wasn't created for them at all. It's the criminal code. And animals are literally property under the law. So. Yeah. It's so interesting to hear you speak, Letitia, because it's just such, you know, it's so obvious that, you know, this is the biggest part of the problem.
We can see that those individuals, they're not things. But our law has to do better. But we've got to remember, we're in liberal democracies. We're responsible for the laws that we live under. That's what being a citizen of a liberal democracy means. We need to change this frame. They're not things. We need laws that say that they're not things, and we need to protect their non-thinghood, which means they can't be property.
Letitia, Andrew, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thanks so much.
So, Jen, what did you think of this interview with Letitia Menel and Andrew Fenton? They're two phenomenal philosophy professors that I've met at several animal welfare conferences over the years. And it's funny because sitting in the audience when different speakers have gone up and presented during the Q&A period, often it's like it's the rebel philosophy prof Canadians that are causing trouble in the Q&A. I'm just sort of tongue in cheek with this a bit, but I was really impressed with Andrew and really impressed with Letitia at a couple of conferences. And so went up and introduced myself, and I find them quite fascinating, their views.
There's something that Letitia had mentioned that I found very interesting, and it was a very powerful question. And it's a very simple question. It's, who are zoos for? Are they for humans or are they really for animals? And I think that's really interesting.
For me, I found the most fascinating part of the conversation really to be the last part when we started talking about animals as being property under the law. And Andrew kept emphasizing animals are not things. They are not things. But in most countries around the world, that is exactly what they are in terms of their rights or lack of rights.
Exactly. And that brings us to that notion of personhood, which is very interesting because in the eyes of the law, a university is a person. You know, when you're, for example, let's say you keep going after a specific business or institution, they can sue you because you have been, you know, attacking that institution. And in the eyes of the law, it's like attacking a person.
Wow. And yet a living being is considered to
an object.
An object. And when Letitia said, she said to Andrew, she said, we have to change our language surrounding them, that they're not a stack of books. That I thought was a very poignant moment as well. When I think of collections, I think of children with their stamp collections or their sticker collections or a person with their shoe collection. It's a group of objects usually that are created or owned by somebody. Mm-hmm. So this idea of ownership is implicit in the term. And if we're not even stopping to reevaluate and rename things on that level, then how can we be expected to start giving animals the personhood they deserve? I'm reading an amazing book right now. It's fairly recent. It only came out in the last few years, called The Animal's Agenda: Freedom, Compassion, and Coexistence in the Human Age. And it was written by Mark Beckoff and Jessica Pierce. So listen to this quote from the beginning of this book by Mark Beckoff and Jessica Pierce. So, animals, in fact, they are like us in many ways. Indeed, our basic physical and psychological needs are pretty much the same. Like us, they want and need food, water, air, sleep. They need shelter and safety from physical and psychological threats and an environment they can control. And like us, they have what might be called higher order needs, such as the need to exercise control over their own lives, make choices, do meaningful work, form meaningful relationships with others, and engage in forms of play and creativity.
I couldn't agree more. It's exactly it. And it reminds me of something my English professor said in high school. So that goes back a little while, but I really liked what he said. He kept saying that we keep putting a distance between us and other animals. And people always say humans and animals, but people seem to forget that we are animals. We're mammals.
I know, it's really apes. Funny, isn't it?
We're apes, actually. We're great apes, just to make things clear with everyone. And the only difference between us and other animals is that we're the only animal that refuses to be an animal, that can't accept that it's an animal. So there's no other difference. We have the same needs. We have the, like it's, and he said that, and I thought it was such an interesting quote. I don't know if he took it from somewhere else, but, you know, I'm still stuck with that quote in my head because I loved it.
And listen, the end of that actually goes on a little bit. And what they say is some measure of freedom is fundamental to satisfying these higher order needs and provides a necessary substrate for individuals to thrive and to look forward to a new day. Freedom is the key to many aspects of animal well-being, and lack of freedom is at the root of many of the miseries we intentionally and unintentionally inflict on animals under our care, whether they suffer from physical or social isolation, or from being unable to move freely about their worlds and engage the various senses and capacities for which they are so exquisitely evolved. For this particular podcast, I found the most poignant element the discussion of animals are not things. So I'm thinking something like, tell your elected officials that animals are not things, or demand your country's legislation reflect this. Something like, tell your elected officials that animals are not things. So Jen, who is the celebrity that we're going to go with this time?
I think we should go Canadian again. You know, this being a mainly Canadian podcast, I was thinking maybe Alex Harouche. So he's from Montreal. Now he lives in Toronto. He played on that very Canadian show. Do you know about Degrassi?
Degrassi Junior High. Degrassi yeah. I actually used to have to watch Degrassi as part of my, I think it was like grade 8 English class. They would actually show us episodes of Degrassi.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So it's an old show.
Well, yeah, all I know is that, you know, Alex played in season 13. Yeah, he was in a bunch of other stuff. He's also in Handmaid's Tale right now.
Oh, very
cool. Yeah, amongst others, I know he was in the movie The Night Before Halloween also. So yeah, I think he'd be amazing for that show on the ethics of zoos.
Is he into animal welfare issues?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's interested in animals. He is interested in animals. I'm not sure how much he knows about animal welfare issues. I mean, if he doesn't know much, he'd be the perfect person to, you know, reach out to.
Okay, I like it. And what is the message that we're going to go with then?
So I think we should just go with something along the lines, animals need private time too. They, like everyone, they need sometimes quiet time. They don't necessarily want to be seen all the time.
Yeah, that really struck me when Letitia pointed that out, that it's the irony really is what struck me of a zoo environment, because so many animals, as she said, really don't want to be seen. That's kind of part of their whole natural way of being. So for us to put them on open display like that is really counterintuitive and, you know, not very ethical.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even if they did want to be seen, if you think about it, how many people pass through a zoo each day? It's like, you know, when you're tapping in the glass.
Oh, yeah. Like, the kids tapping on the glass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes you say, oh, what harm is in there, tapping in a glass? But I mean, I've worked in zoos. From the visitor side, it seems like it's nothing. But when you're on the other side, what happens, it resonates into the enclosure, or if it's, especially if it's enclosed.
It amplifies the sound. It amplifies
exactly.
It.
I, as a human, used to think it was annoying, and most of these species have their earring that is like 10 times better than mine, so I can't even imagine what it is for them. And it's multiple times a day. It's like every, you know, I don't have exact numbers of how many people go through a zoo's gate, but like when you think, oh, it's just a little tap, like it really isn't. It's like the next person after you is going to do it, and the next, and the next, and that's, it's all day from opening to closing.
You know, it's really interesting hearing you talk about that as a vet tech, because I was having a separate conversation with one of our producers, Sophie, who's also a vet tech. But she was saying the exact same thing about that, about tapping on the glass. So I think you're right. A very simple message to, you know, people that are visiting animals, whether it's in a zoo environment or even whether it's in the wild, a simple message of respect animals' privacy. Right. So something like animals need privacy too.
Exactly.
Let's do a better job of respecting that or something.
Exactly. I agree. And I'm sure a lot of zoo staff will be very...
Okay, great. Let's go try to reach Alex.
Let's do this.